This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Schools will reopen with a mix of in-person and remote learning this fall. Each district is making its own specific plan, but the guidelines announced yesterday mandate a remote-only option. Districts can also choose to go entirely online. Governor Roy Cooper announced the plan and certain requirements for schools yesterday, including face masks, capacity limits, and daily health screenings. He also announced that North Carolina will stay in Phase 2 for at least another 3 weeks. Dave DeWitt is WUNC's feature news editor, also one of the hosts of the WUNC podcast Tested, and he's been reporting on schools and education. Dave, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Anita.
So there are 1.5 million public school students in North Carolina, parents and teachers super anxiously awaiting this announcement from the governor. Supposed to come a few weeks ago. We finally got the details yesterday. Tell us about what we heard.
So Governor Cooper chose option B, which means that there would be a need to be increased social distancing with schools no more than 50% and buses at no more than 33% capacity. This is essentially splitting the middle. Plan A would have been minimal social distancing, essentially all in-person instruction, and Plan C would have been remote instruction only. So while the governor did choose Plan B and he mandated things like face masks for every student, teacher, and staff and time designated for hand washing, he did not tell the school district specifically how to make that all happen. So he left all of the specifics about scheduling, what students needed to be in school, which ones could be remote, he left that to the individual districts.
Okay, so students are supposed to start school August 17th. So between now and then, what are school districts doing? What are they doing to design these reopening plans?
Well, for one, they can change that calendar somewhat. So there's a lot of variation that school districts will have. Let's pick one. Wake County, for example, which is the 15th largest school district in the country, will open schools at sort of one-third capacity. So about 30% of the students will be in school at any one time. Three groups of kids throughout all the grades, one is in school and the other two are remote learning. And they go through that every 3 weeks, that rotation, as opposed to what Durham County is doing, which is K through eight is in person 5 days a week, while high school students are online only. And you see school districts across the state, from Asheville to Cumberland County, Guilford County, using some variation of those kind of two extreme different decisions. Some of them are using last names as the delineation between which students will be in and which one will not be. But as you pointed out, all school districts will have to offer a remote learning option only for parents to choose.
So you're a parent yourself, Dave, and I can imagine that this is really causing a headache and a lot of confusion for people because there are so many moving parts and so many factors to consider. So what are parents kind of going through right now? What is this timeline and what do they have to decide in the next coming weeks?
Yeah, so when you've got multiple people living in your house, some of whom are under the age of 18, the schedule is everything. The calendar is everything because everybody's got so many moving parts and so many different things and activities going on. So just knowing the schedule, knowing what's going to be in front of you is really important for families. And this not knowing, whether it was the governor delaying by a couple of weeks and now school districts sort of in varying degrees scrambling to get something together, that's the hardest part for parents right now is how do you know what choices to make and what are the outcomes of those choices? And not only for your individual child or your family, but more broadly, I'll give you an example. Here in Durham, where my kids go to school, you know, we're trying to decide whether we want our children to stay at home and do remote learning, which we could do because we are fortunate enough to have internet and computers for everybody. But we wonder then if what they're missing by not going to school. But if, let's say, we take an in-person slot, does that then, you know, make it more difficult for families who can't make a choice like we have and have to send their child to school because of the parents' work? So there's all kinds of reasons and decisions that parents are trying to weigh. Often that is focused on your child, but often it's focused on what's best for the community.
So there are these questions of health as well, health of the students who are going to school every day, health of the teachers who are reporting in person for the bus drivers. How are their health considerations being taken into account in these guidelines?
So a lot of districts are giving the teachers an opportunity to choose remote learning. Let's say that they have underlying conditions or they're at risk somehow, giving teachers that option. Some teachers obviously will choose that, and before they can really start to make broader calendars and schedules and everything else for students, they need to know what teachers are available and not. And we should underline this by saying North Carolina was in a teacher shortage before the pandemic. This is going to only exacerbate the problem because as you have fewer kids in schools and in classrooms, that means you need more teachers, and there just aren't more teachers out there. You mentioned bus drivers. That's an interesting problem that school districts will have because bus drivers tend to be older. I think here in Durham, the average bus driver is over 65 years old. That puts them at more risk for COVID-19. And so now you have to consider how you not only sort of manage that, but if a bus driver is out for any period of time, how do you rotate somebody else in there? So all of these moving parts, every district is saying health of everybody in the school is the first, factor in all the decisions they're trying to make. But as this pandemic progresses, it will become only more difficult.
I mean, and as we heard yesterday, kind of buried in the announcement was that we are staying in phase two because North Carolina's numbers are not great. For the first time, there were more than 1,100 hospitalizations. So Secretary Mandy Cohen was both expressing these statistics, but also saying, you know, they're trying to use the qualitative guidance that they know about the importance of children being in school for reasons that go beyond just COVID-19. So can you talk about kind of weighing those two sets of guidance?
Yeah, probably the strongest set of guidance that came in was from the American Association of Pediatrics, which they say they want to start with a goal of having students physically present in schools. And they point that smaller risks of spreading infection and experience the worst outcomes of younger kids in those schools. But they then more broadly talk to the importance of school in a child's life. You know, the United States has a fragmented, inequitable safety net across the board, healthcare, housing, food insecurity. But schools often end up stepping up and providing that for a lot of kids who fall through those gaps. It's sort of a panacea for all of those things. Think free reduced price lunch, you think school counselors, all of those things. And because of that, that's why the American Association of Pediatrics, a lot of parents, a lot of school personnel want to see kids in schools if at all possible, particularly kids who are younger, because they benefit a little bit more from this, at least according to some research. So that's been really important. That said, obviously you have to balance that with the real distinct problems and issues that are facing us due to the pandemic.
So you mentioned that we've been in a teacher shortage. We've been talking about school budgets, public education funding over and over and over again for the past decade. This seems like it's going to be really expensive for schools to make all of these modifications. What are the concerns around cost and funding?
That there isn't going to be enough. So, you know, you could make a really strong argument that schools were underfunded before the pandemic. There's going to be no additional money coming from the federal government. And in fact, the federal government, in sort of strange Twitter and interviews, have said they're going to perhaps hold money back if schools are not doing what they want them to do. But to give you an example of sort of what the problems facing schools are, you know, here in Durham the other night, there was a town hall trying to explain what the plan is. And Pascal Mubenga, who's the superintendent, had been pointed to a specific example, a suggestion that came from a parent. Why don't we take over, we being the schools, Northgate Mall, which is an abandoned mall here in Durham, and put the high school students in there? It's a giant facility. And he pointed out just to move desks into that facility would be $200 each. There are 10,000 high school students in the state or in Durham alone. That's $2 million before a person walks in the door. So that gives you a sense of how expensive one option is. But all these options come with a cost, financial, at-risk cost, health, and weighing all of that and families trying to weigh that for themselves. You can imagine how challenging this is for everyone.
Governor Cooper really emphasized yesterday, you know, I don't want politics to come into this decision. But as we know, politics comes into almost every decision. So what are we hearing from both sides of the aisle? Is there unanimous support for increasing funding for schools? Is there unanimous support on what the right plan should be? Or is there some difference of opinion?
Yeah, there's not unanimous support, I think, for any of this. And politics at sort of the state level, not surprisingly, Governor Cooper, being a Democrat, his decisions in reopening all along have been questioned by Republicans who have generally wanted to see a faster reopening and a more broad reopening across the economy, and they stay with that sort of in the schools aspect too. I'm going to read a little bit from what House Speaker Tim Moore said yesterday. Today's announcement that classrooms will remain closed to students either periodically or completely exacerbates the administration's economic and public health failures, while adding even more uncertainty for struggling families in North Carolina. And a similar statement was made by Senate Leader Phil Berger. One of the interesting things, Governor Cooper did check the legality of these decisions with the Attorney General Josh Stein, also a Democrat. So, you know, politics plays a decision in how these things are announced and communicated. I think you see across the board, though, that parents, whatever their political persuasion, they really see this decision as how does this affect my particular family, my particular school? Like so much across schools, it is people care a lot about generally about some of the bigger aspects of schools, but really the overriding factor is the specific thing that happens in their classroom and in their school.
A lot for parents, teachers, students, and everyone to consider, and we will continue to follow the reporting from WUNC as well as what you feature on the Tested podcast. Dave DeWitt, WUNC's feature news editor and host of the WUNC podcast Tested. Dave, thanks so much.
Thanks, Anita.
You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.